All right, I think that's good enough. We're close enough. Let's get started. My name is Jeff Fritz. I'm a program manager on the ASP.NET team, and we're going to talk about a deep dive on ASP.NET Core 1.0. Okay, this is a deep dive. I'm assuming that you've done some ASP.NET Core at this point, okay? I'm not going to do some intro topics, but we're going to really dive into some of these things and really peek under the covers at how some of ASP.NET works. So, we're going to cover a little bit of working on the command line, some of the things and opportunities that you have when you work on the command line, some of the tools that exist there. I'm going to try and focus on that because the command line is the one cross-platform way that you can do anything in ASP.NET Core. Works on Mac, Linux, and Windows, so it's important that we have a good foundation there on the command line. We're going to talk a bit about hosting today. There's a number of questions that people have had about, well, how do I get this working on IIS, on my Windows web server? We'll go through and show you a little bit about how that works and how some of the plumbing works with how ASP.NET Core talks to IIS now that we're in a little bit different model with .NET Core. We're going to talk a little bit about configuration. There's some interesting things that we can do to configure our applications where things now are not necessarily living inside of web config. So how do we configure our new applications? What options do we have there? We'll take a look at that and some other interesting things that are now available to us. Middleware and routing, right? Middleware is our new way that we can configure how ASP.NET processes our application. We're going to dig into that a bit. And we're also going to take a look at the end about how to use the full .NET framework features, right? That .NET framework we've been using on Windows for the past 10, 15 years. How do I use those features with ASP.NET Core? Because so much has been made about using ASP.NET Core cross-platform and with this new .NET Core framework. Well, I've got these things that are still out there running with .NET full framework on Windows. How can I use those features? We'll take a look at that. So, where and how do I get ASP.NET Core? To review, go get and install everything from .NET. That's our favorite vanity URL that makes it sound like we're stuttering. .NET, and I have to explain to people, no, DOT, period, NET. The docs live at docs.asp.net, completely open source and available for you to go out there, download, create a PDF version, have it installed and run on your e-reader device, all available there for you. All of the source code, because we know ASP.NET Core is now open source, at github.com/ASP.NET. We have a weekly community stand-up. This is a video where a number of the program managers from the team get together to talk about their progress, answer some questions that you may have, and bring that together and present as a video each week, each Tuesday, online at liveasp.net. If you missed the video and you want to go back and see what things they've been talking about, there's an archive there, and we have show notes that are available on our blog, which is the next line, msdnmicrosoft.com, blogs msdnmicrosoft.com/webdev. The preview one for the next version of ASP.NET Core was just released on Monday. Now, I'm not going to focus on the preview version here because it's a preview. It's not supported yet. It's something that we want you to check out if you're interested. There's an announcement on that at this URL on our blog, okay? All right, I'm going to dive right into the command line. We're going to take a look at a little bit about how the .NET command line tool helps us out when we're working with an application. So I'm going to jump right into the command line, and I'm going to go into my dev folder. That's where I do all of my development, is under cdev. And let's make a folder. We'll call this dev intersection demos. Okay? So when I'm in this folder, I now can do all kinds of things to build and work with .NET projects using the .NET command line interface. So if I just execute .NET, it shows me a couple things about the version of the tool that I have available to me and that is installed. It says it's version 101, and I actually get a build hash there that points to a version so that if we need to go and ask for support, we can say I'm using this version of it and exactly this build of the tool, right? Because everything is open source, you might be using a different version of this that you may have modified that's different from the one that Microsoft deployed. So that's nice, but where exactly does this .NET thing live, right? We heard a bit during some of the keynotes, and we've heard that you can have .NET versions live side by side on your machine. Well, if we take a look under Program Files, there is a .NET folder and an SDK. And actually, let me show you this. Here's .NET EXE. That's the EXE that's in the command line that when I execute .NET on my console, this is executed. But it's actually a lie. This actually routes, depending on the version of the SDK that I'm using, to one of these versions over here, okay? One of these is the 1.0.0 version, the other one is the 1.0.1 version. So if I take a look in there, you can see .NET DLL. This is the version that is actually executed when I run .NET EXE, okay? Based on my version that I want to use, it'll call into this appropriately. And you can see all of the things that I need in order to run my application are sitting here in this shared SDK folder, okay? This is a shared framework folder that's available for any application on my machine. So if I have these, what we call portable applications, they'll look here for content first. Now, from this location, I can start up a new application by saying .NET new, right? And when I look in my folder, I have a program CS and a project JSON, and we know that we restore our packages by saying .NET restore. So when .NET restore fires, it looks at project JSON and it's gonna figure out what's in there, and it writes out this project lock JSON file. Well, we know that inside of project JSON, right, we have these dependencies that are defined that are NuGet packages. When we build project lock JSON, this is a series of pointers to the things that came out of those NuGet packages to say, here's where these things are on disk if you actually need to reference and use them, okay? So if I actually need to use system.io file system, there's a pointer in here that says exactly where to find that on disk. Okay, there's where C sharp is, some other references if I need to walk the chain and bring in some other dependencies. So this isn't something that you're typically going to commit to source control, okay? This is something that is generated for your development machine at build time, well, actually at restore time, so that you can build your application. Now, where do those NuGet packages live? Because I'm used to seeing perhaps a packages folder sitting here inside my project folder. Well, your NuGet packages now live under userprofile.nuget. And here's your NuGet packages, okay? So for example, here's MVC, and you can see I have three different versions of MVC that I've installed and are available on my machine without having to reach back across the internet to nuget.org to download that content. If I reach into the 1.0.1 folder here, there you can see the NupKeg, N-U-P-K-G, I tried calling it NuGet packages, and you start working with so many of these things after a while that saying NuGet package, NuGet package, NuGet package is just a little bit too much, and you end up shrinking it down to NupKeg when you start dealing with pushing these things around. So there's my NupKeg and my new spec that defines the contents of this, and you can actually see the DLLs for the appropriate frameworks sitting right here. So that's where everything is laying on disk by default when I execute stuff from the command line. So we know that we can do a .NET build from here, right? And it goes and it compiles and it makes my project available to run at this point. Because if I do a .NET run, I get my hello world. Big deal. But what's important is that we now know where all these things actually live on disk, because in previous versions of the .NET framework and our .NET projects, we had everything in one place, right? It was in the GAC under C, Windows, Microsoft.NET, some version number. Well, now it's over here, okay? And when I build, everything moves into one place. and I don't have 16 versions of my NuGet packages with every one of my project folders laying on disk. It's all in one place, so now you save disk space, okay? We get some reuse of where these things are located. So that's nice. There's just a few other things that you can do on the command line by default. We can publish. We're gonna take a look at publishing in a deep dive a little bit further along here. We've done run. You can test if you have a test framework installed. You can pack. You can pack up those assets so they're now a NuGet package. But that's really the things that you need to know about the command line, and this works everywhere, okay? And the command line is extensible. We're actually gonna add a couple things onto the command line here in a little bit to add some features that make it a little bit more valuable for our projects, for our applications. Let me go back to the slides, because I want to talk about hosting next. There we go. So when we're hosting our applications, by default, when we start up a new ASP.NET Core 1.0 application, we're going to be hosting with the Kestrel web server, okay? Kestrel is this new, completely rewritten web server that is available for you to add on no matter your framework, okay? No matter your operating system, I'm sorry. Windows, Mac, and Linux all support this Kestrel web server that was built on top of the libuv library, right? Libuv is the same library that they use for Node.js to spin that up and run the different web frameworks over there. So we've got a good foundation that's cross-platform and works for us. Now, we've also got a web server available for us called WebListener, okay? WebListener's been around for a little bit. It's something that we were tinkering with. We didn't make it a full RTM with the 1.0 release, but with the 1.1 preview, we're now making it available for you to check out, test, and work with, and we'll see a little bit more about that. We're gonna switch back and forth between the two. WebListener is a Windows-based web server that is a wrapper around the HTTP sys DLL. So it's very low level, and it runs very, very fast, just like Kestrel. When we use either of these servers, we have a bunch of properties we can configure. So not only can we choose that server, but we can also configure what URLs it listens on, right? Maybe you don't want to listen on port 80. Maybe you want to listen on port 5000. That's where we configure it by default, so that it listens somewhere that is typically not used by another application. Configure how you want your application to start up. There's a startup class that we use, right, to configure how the application runs. You can change the name of that class. You can change how it's hosted. The content root. Where does our application live? Where does all of my C# files live and get compiled from, and our views and our controllers? Where exactly is that folder on disk? You can configure that at hosting time. The web root. Right, by default, you've seen we have a www root folder out there that we use for our static files, but maybe you're using something like Angular 2 and you don't want to use the www root folder because you want to install your node modules at the root of your application and have all of your Angular things happen at the root and then hide your controllers off to the side. You can do that. That's all a configuration option that's available to you. There's stuff around the programming environment, the development environment, or the production environment that you're operating in. Which one are you living in? Because you may do things differently, right, if you're in development versus production. And the last one is this application name, right, which is weird. You may not, you typically don't want to change your application name, right? The application name is really the name of the assembly that gets generated when you compile your ASP.NET application. There's not really a reason to change that, but that property is hanging out there if you want to inspect it, okay, and do some work with it. So let's actually, there's a full list of the configuration values out here at this address. So I left it there so you can click on it and go through it on your own time later. So let's take a look at hosting and some of the things that we can do to configure and run our application. All right, so I'm going to start up Visual Studio 2015. This is community version of Visual Studio. This is the free version that you can download. If you're a hobbyist or you have a small business, you can use this version with no royalties, no cost. There we go. So I have update 3 installed. So let me just do a file new application so we can see what a default application looks like here. And then we'll start to tinker with it. So this is web application 87. I have to remember that 87, very creatively named, because web application 86 wasn't good enough for this demo. We're going to 87. So this is going to start up, and right, we know that by default, once it starts, it will give me a little yellow bar here that it's finishing restoring packages, because project JSON needs to be, right, we need our .NET restore run so that we get our project lock JSON. This is the contents of project JSON by default. And there's some configuration things in here that instruct and tell things like when I publish, make things available for IIS. Let's configure IIS appropriately so that it can handle this ASP.NET application. Now, that's very interesting. There's this publish IIS command that's been added to .NET. Up here, we have a tools section. The tools section is a lot like the dev dependencies you might see in NPM or in Bower, right? You see these dependencies that only get used when you're in development mode, and they don't get deployed with your package. They don't get deployed with your project. Same thing here. These are tools that you're using to build your application that aren't needed when we go to publish and deploy. So this here, this server ASP.NET Core, I'm sorry, Microsoft ASP.NET Core Server IIS integration tools, this is a tool that's made available to help configure your application for IIS so that it's integrated and can be handled appropriately. So let's take a little bit further look here at how that hosting is configured. Now that happens over here in Program CS. There's this static void main, and this is where it configures and says, I'm going to use the Kestrel web server. Now, Kestrel is a very fast web server, does a lot of really great things, but it was completely rewritten. It's something that we're still testing, we're still going through some of the paces on to make sure that it's hardened and secure. And we recommend at this time that if you're going to use Kestrel, you need to hide it behind either IIS or Nginx or Apache, a really robust web server that has been hardened for security that you can expose to the internet so that you make sure that you don't have any possible security issues that we don't know about yet. So you set that up to reverse proxy, and that's what this use IIS integration is here. It does this reverse proxy where the requests that come into IIS are handed off to Kestrel, and then Kestrel processes and passes it back up the line. Now, this is actually something that we've seen before, because when you were running ASP.NET 4.6 and earlier, you would start your application, and if you looked inside of Task Manager, you had not only IIS running, but you also had this W3WP thing out there running, right? You guys remember W3WP? Right. So that's where ASP.NET was actually doing its work. It wasn't doing its work inside the IIS process. It was over here in a spun-off process, and IIS was handing requests over to that for processing and then passing it back out. Same thing is going to happen here. Now, if I start this with IIS, with IIS Express, right, it's going to start up and I'm going to get some random port number, right? 5249 is what it decided on this time. Now that's nice. It's not something that as a developer I can count on always being that same number, and I'm running behind IIS. By default, Kestrel is listening on 5000, but I'm being routed to 5249. You can configure how Kestrel is listening. And if we go and launch Kestrel directly from the command line, I'll actually get it listening and responding on that port. So if I choose web application 87 inside my combo box here, this will actually run it the same way on the command line that I was executing things in the console, window earlier. So now I'm going to localhost 5000, and now I see my website. You can actually see it start up the command line over here, and I've got my logging coming out, and no problem, right? I can see and interact with that, and you can clearly see it's listening on 5000. And it's also it also has this development hosting environment, right? So let's cancel out of that. What if I don't want to listen on 5000? What if I want to start to change and deal with some of these other things, some of these other properties that I can do with my project? So what you can do is you can actually start to specify things like the server URLs. This is one of those properties that you can change on your application. So you can actually say use, and I think it's hiding down here, use URLs, and then it'll actually take a string collection of URLs that it'll listen on. So I'm going to listen on localhost 8028. So now if I start this, it's going to start up, recompile, and now Visual Studio wants to launch at localhost 5000, and there's nothing there, because you can see Kestrel has actually started up and listening on 8028, just like I configured it. So if I change this and go to 8028, of course, that's where I'm going to find my application. There it is. But if I want to host on an alternate port, I have this thing sitting here and hard-coded into my startup into my program CS file. That's not something I want my operations folks to have to maintain, right? When I want to push this out to my operations team to go to a production space, I don't want them in and tinkering with my C sharp, right? Because then they have to recompile, and that's going to be dicey, right? That's going to be risky, questionable at best. So there's some other things that we can do to push that URL setting and some of the other settings around. And I'm just picking on URLs here because it's the easiest one to really demonstrate and show. So what you can do is you can actually pass it on as an environment variable. You can pass it in, and you can see that configured. If I come over here and I choose project properties, and if I go into debug, there's environment variables that are configured for me by default. And because I'm coming out of Visual Studio, it's configuring the development environment for any time that I run my application. I'm going to add a configuration option here for ASP.NET Core URLs, and I'm going to set that value to HTTP localhost, and let's make it 8080. Right? 8080 is good. So if I save that, right? So I've removed that other setting, and now if I restart it, so it's starting it on the command line because it's running Kestrel directly. There it is, it's at 8080, and this is navigating to the wrong place, so let me change it back just to prove that it works and I'm not pulling a fast one here, and there's our application. So we can pass things like our URL that we're listening to on as an environment variable. And when I showed you this URL over here inside the deck, let me just grab it so I can show you. All of our configuration options that you can set, wrong one, that's not the right URL, this one. Here we go. All of our configuration options that we have available to us are available as a configuration option for hosting inside of program, and also here as an environment variable, we see the keys that we can set to define and configure our application. So I can change my content root, right, where my application is living. I can change that by setting an environment variable, right? I can also turn on very detailed errors, which you may not want to do in production. By default, this is false, but if you're in a testing environment, you may want to set this to true, and you can set that on the server, and now everybody gets that same configuration applied to them. So the environment, you saw me inside of Visual Studio, I had the environment is automatically configured for me, but I can set the environment also here in C# code if I'd like, or we can actually bring in configuration from another file and lay it down on top of our hosting configuration. So let's take a look at that real quick. So there's my content root saying go to the current directory. So let me actually just grab this. I'm going to do a quick refactor and introduce a local, and we'll call that content root. So let's create some configuration and load a configuration file that has some configuration things set for me already for hosting. So let's create something called configuration. Let's just call it config. I don't feel like typing that much. Equals new configuration builder. And yep, that's what we want. Okay, so we're going to set the base path to the content root. And then I'm going to read a file. So let's load a file. What is it? Add JSON file, that's what it is. Let's load a hosting.json file. Let's make it optional, because in dev I might not have this, but in production, I may have that available where my host, my operations folks want to force my hosting configuration to a certain type of settings. So now if there's a hosting JSON file on disk, it's going to load that up and make it available, all of those settings on top of my application. Now configuration with all of our things in ASP.NET is top to bottom, it gets inserted, okay? So my configuration is going to be loaded from hosting JSON, and I can insert it now into my web host configuration where I'm using Kestrel, I have a certain content root, IIS, my startup. I'm going to modify my configuration here with anything that's in hosting JSON. So I will say add use configuration, whatever's inside of hosting JSON. In hosting JSON, let's just make up a simple file, a simple JSON file, and put a couple things into it so we can force a configuration. So let's add, we'll add a new item, .NET Core, let me find JSON. There we go, and we will call this hosting.json. So now I've got a bare JSON file here. So now let me force my URLs. And let's have it go somewhere different now. We'll go localhost, let's go 8021, okay? And I can force my environment also here. So let's force that also. So instead of development, the way that it's being set up by Visual Studio, let me change this to staging. Let me spell staging properly. There we go. Let's run this and see what happens. So it built. So now the hosting environment changed to staging. It's listening on the alternate port. And my host has been configured. My Kestrel web server has been configured, not ASP.NET, but just the host capabilities, so that it's listening somewhere else and it thinks it's a different environment. And there's my website. Now, this may be valuable to you if you have multiple data centers and you want to configure things in one data center and be able to deploy and have a hosting JSON file so that in your production West Coast data center, it behaves like this. And your production East Coast data center, it behaves differently. And you don't want to juggle environment variables. You just want to carry around little hosting JSON files that are easy for your operations folks to reach into, poke a couple settings, and they're good, okay? So that's a little bit about how you can configure hosting for Kestrel. Now, I also mentioned that you can change up your server, and we now have this web listener server available. So how does that work? Well, web listener actually is available as another NuGet package. You can see Kestrel is right there, but we can add in web listener as a second server at Microsoft. .ASP.NET Core server web listener. See it there? Okay.
Oops.
There we go. So if I choose that, and then I've got a couple different ones that I can choose from here. I'm going to choose the 100. Save. And now if I open up my Solution Explorer, you can see it's restoring that package. It's bringing down those things that it needs to run WebListener. And it's done. I can go back to Program here, and instead of saying use Kestrel, that cross-platform fast web server, I can comment that out and say now use WebListener, all right? And I have the same configuration things that are set for my hosting JSON file. If I run this now, so this is .NET Core using the WebListener service. It's listening on 8021. And there's my content coming from WebListener. So we have two different servers that are available from Microsoft. Now there's another one out there called the test server that actually doesn't listen on a port. It actually functions completely in memory, okay? It's not quite very compelling, but it might be valuable to you if you're doing some testing. There's one more that I want to mention. I want to make sure that those folks get a little bit of credit about it with this group. If you guys have used Nancy, anybody used the Nancy server in the past? Okay, I see a couple hands, maybe about 10% of the room. Nancy is available to use. You can add that in and use Nancy instead of Kestrel and Web Server to handle and process your requests, okay? So you've got four options that you can configure for a server and then run and configure and do with as you please, okay? And of course, if you're using Nancy, you're gonna be in the Nancy programming model at that point where you stand up modules that listen to and respond to the different requests. So that's nice. We have these are the layers of web servers that we have, but when I get into production, I want to run with IIS. Is that what you were going to ask?
Well, I was going to ask, how does it know how does it connecting your hosting that JSON file with the variables that you need to run?
So the question is, how is that hosting JSON file being connected to so that it knows how to run and consume those things? That information is right here. So I'm building a configuration on lines 18 through 21, and then that configuration is being injected into my service right here on line 28. So everything that was loaded up from hosting JSON is being inserted right there, and then my host builder, right, the thing that says build a host so that it can run ASP.NET, is actually run right here on line 33. So the question is that hosting JSON matching on a keyword? That's not hosting JSON. These configuration variables that are listed here, these match up and are defined inside the documentation. These are the hosting configuration values, and it lists here the keys that you can use. So if you use that key, it'll reference it and make it available. If you want to use that key as an environment variable, prefix it with ASP.NET Core underscore. So if I wanted to run this on the command line, so let me just do that real quick to show you, because that's a good question, sir. Thank you. Let me go web application. What was it, 87? Oh, look at that. Right? So if I do a dir here, there's my hosting JSON and all that. So if I do a .NET, I'm sorry. So if I just do a .NET run at this point, it's going to come back and tell me that it is on staging because that's what's inside my hosting JSON file. Let me move that hosting JSON file. Let me call it hosting.json.old. There it is. So now if I rerun, WebListener is listening on production, right? I don't have an environment variable configured for the ASP.NET environment, so by default, it's production, okay? It's when you're running in development that we need to override and start telling it that it's living somewhere else. If I set that environment variable, and I set it to something else, let's set it to Las Vegas. And now I run, it comes back and it says the hosting environment is Las Vegas. Now, ASP.NET Core doesn't have anything inherently that knows what to do with the setting Las Vegas. But you can write some code that says, if the environment name is this, go do something else. Don't log because I'm in Las Vegas, because everything in Vegas stays in Vegas. Unless you're streaming it to the internet to a couple thousand of your friends. So, how do we get that integrated with IIS? Right? Okay, this is great. You're running with Kestrel, you're running with WebListener, but I want to run with IIS. Well, we've got some tools that are built into Visual Studio that we can use very easily to light up IIS, and you saw them sitting here with this use IIS integration. Now, let's dig into that a little bit. I've actually got a separate demo project that's set up here so I can demonstrate some of the things that are going on inside of there. So I mentioned there's a tool that's configured that's over here inside of my project JSON that's for IIS integration tools. And this makes available the ability to say .NET publish IIS. This is an extension onto the .NET command line. And I need to include the IIS integration package so that it knows that it's going to be communicating with IIS, and we need to set that up so it happens securely. Inside of my program CS, there's the use IIS integration, but let me go over to startup so we can take a look and understand a little bit about what's going on here. When IIS integration is set up, we actually use a web config. Let me show this first. This web config, because IIS configures everything with a web config file, this is where IIS looks for how the folder should be configured, what options should be turned on, if it should hand things off to another process, and that's what we have here. We have our ASP.NET Core module that is defined. There's a handler right here, and it's configured on this line, so IIS knows how to pick this up. We read the configuration here, and this knows how to call .NET and pass in the name of our application and then do some logging over here. So IIS will receive the call. This tells it here's how to pass things off to Kestrel so that it can listen. When Kestrel is called, or WebListener, whatever your server you're running on behind IIS, a couple things are passed over to it. The application path that IIS is listening on, and this token thing, okay? Now, the token is actually a little handshake mechanism, okay? It's a GUID that IIS generates that Kestrel knows to listen for so that it can make sure that nothing intercepts between that call, between IIS and the server, right? This way, if that changes somewhere along the line, it'll back off and say, this is an error, something else happened here, and just fail on you. So what I've done, I've actually modified the way that this application starts so that it will return only text, and it's gonna take a look at the addresses that IIS is listening on, and then show me a little bit of that information. So let's run this from IIS Express and take a look, dig into this a little bit more here. Lucky me. Lucky me. There's IIS. There we go. All right. So let's unpack this a little bit. So I'm listening on, and you can see my address up at the top. Right? IIS was listening on 10805. But Kestrel is actually at 1658, right? These are two different processes, and IIS is receiving the request and forwarding it to 1658. It's listening on just the slash, right? It's at the root of the application. That's where it lives. And here are these two tokens that are being passed around, okay? So IIS sets this token variable for Kestrel to see, so Kestrel knows what to listen for, and Kestrel received this token inside of its HTTP request headers. Check it out. If I look at my startup here, that requested token, I pulled it out of the context request headers, MS ASP.NET Core token. This is where it's doing this handshake. There's a custom header that you don't see that gets added onto the request that Kestrel knows how to pick up and handshake with. Now, this is important for you to know if you're going to write your own web server so that you know how to handle this handshake and pass things back and forth to IIS. Make sense? So that's nice, but what happens when I actually want to publish? I'm not going to pass this project JSON and C# files over to IIS. That'd be crazy. I want to run DLLs. I want this to run fast and on a framework over there on my production web server. There's publish tools that are sitting here in Visual Studio that you can right-click on, say publish, and go through this process. And we've all seen this UI before, but it's also available for you on the command line. So let me back up here. And this is called the IIS integration demo. There we go. So now I'm over here. You can run your .NET publish here. And I want to make sure that you see it running on the command line because this is typically where you will be running it from your continuous integration server, right? When your continuous integration server is done doing its building and running your tests, you're going to want to publish from the command line because you don't have Visual Studio running over there, right? So you're going to run something that looks like, well, let me make sure I have nothing sitting here in my debug folder. Let's clear that out. So you would run a .NET build, right, as part of your continuous integration process, done. And then you would do a .NET publish. Now, when I run .NET publish, it's going to go through, and this is the line that I want you to see. Configuring the following project for use with IIS, and then the next line, updating webconfig at, okay? Check this out. So I'm going to come back here into my bin folder, debug, net core app, publish. Here's everything that you need to publish to push over onto your IIS web server. And our webconfig, now this ASP.NET Core line has been changed, right? Those settings that were in there before, those were variables that were being filled in by IIS when it calls filled in by Visual Studio when it calls IIS Express. That's easy for me to say. Here, because we're going to lift this up and put it on full Internet Information Server, we need to actually fill in those values. So it's calling .NET and IIS integration demo .DLL. Now that's nice, but this is a portable application, right? This is an application that relies on there being an SDK installed on the machine. Right? And that means that I've got that cprogramfiles.net folder with an SDK laying out there. And in production, I might not have that. Okay? So this is what's called a portable application that relies on the SDK and that .NET executable being out there. But what if your environment doesn't have it out there? Maybe you've got that grouchy ops team that says, oh, you're not putting that .NET SDK on my production server. And you know what, rightfully so, they don't want to have things compiled on the fly on their servers, on their production servers. So what you can do is you can actually turn this into a self-contained application. So let's do that. Let me show you how easy it is to turn this into something that's self-contained. I go over to Project JSON, and this first bit right here, where it says .NET Core app type platform. Can we see that in the back? Is that big enough for you guys in the back? Okay, I got some thumbs up, all right. And I don't need to ask the folks on the live stream because this is all they're seeing. If I do a control space here, you can see there's actually three options, okay? Default means that this is something that's being included and will be built every time. Build is a build tool, and platform is this SDK thing that's being referenced and is laying somewhere else on disk that I can add in. To make this self-contained though, I'm going to remove that. And I also need to tell it what runtimes to run on so that we get that full set of runtime DLLs that it can reference and use. So here underneath frameworks, I'm just going to add another option for runtimes. There we go. And I'm going to add a runtime because I'm on Windows 10. I'm going to go Windows 10 x64 because I'm on a Surface Pro 3. With just those two changes, nothing else has been modified. Let me come back over here, and I'm going to do a .NET publish. I'm going to specify -c and force it to a release configuration. So it's telling me that it needs to be recompiled because it doesn't have a release. Compilation succeeded, configured the project for use with IIS, completed successfully, and published to this location. And notice it's been released, but now I'm under a Win10 x64 folder. So let's take a look at that. So here's bin, release, netcore app, Win10 64, publish. And now I've got a couple more files here, because I'm actually bringing the entire core CLR with me in this folder for my application to run. There's my web config, and check it out, the process path now is different. It's now not using .NET EXE, it's now referencing my application .exe. It's a full command line app that runs my application. So if I scroll up here, I can actually run my demo on really, really small. There we go, better font. And it's listening on 5000 because I don't have my hosting JSON over here with me. But if I browse to that localhost 5000, there it is listening, and I don't have the other things filled in because I'm not living under IIS yet. If I lift up this entire folder, take it over to IIS, and set that up as an application, that will run and I'll get all that interaction completely self-contained, no other interactions with something installed and laying elsewhere on disk. Cool? That was a lot of IIS and hosting configuration stuff. So I am running really long on time. Let me back up and let's take a look at, I don't need OneNote right now. Sure, there's a question down front. So the question is, published profiles are a little bit more involved now. They are, because you're going to determine how much of the framework you want to bring with you. Where previously in versions of ASP.NET, you were publishing ASP.NET, it only runs on Windows. Windows has the .NET framework installed by default, so wherever you're going, there's a framework for you, so you didn't have to determine how much of the framework am I bringing with me. Good question. Thank you, sir. Let's talk a little bit about middleware. So middleware are those things inside my startup class that I configure exactly how the HTTP pipeline is handled and processed, right? And at the very end of all of our middleware is, of course, MVC, right? MVC is the ultimate last piece of middleware. It's the endpoint that knows all this other stuff that processed and inspected my requests. Well, at this point, go and mash up with a view what's inside of a controller action and send that down the pipe to my browser. There's other types of middleware that we've already got in the box available for you, like routing and authentication. Static files is actually a piece of middleware. We need to instruct our web server what to do with these files. Diagnostics and localization, they're very easy to consume and get into. So let me show you a little bit about routing and how to configure some middleware. There's a deep dive topic on middleware a little bit later today with Steve Smith, if you're interested. So I'm going to back off and go to my middleware demo. So middleware gets configured inside of your startup page, and it's as easy to configure as writing a use statement. So here's a use statement that writes a header called lame middleware and sets the value to simple middleware, and it returns next, okay? Next is this request delegate that you're gonna pass along so that it knows how to chain to the next part of the pipeline, okay? You can do things after next executes. You can do things before next executes. In this case, to keep the pipeline moving as fast as possible, when this little lambda is done, it's just going to pass on to the next method as quickly as possible. And then, right, here's a very simple endpoint. This is another piece of middleware, and all it's doing is writing out hello world. Let me comment out this one before I show you that. And let me start this. So this runs, and if I look at the network request, there it is, and I've got my little header that's been added onto the connection here. That's nice. That's a pain in the neck to configure. If this is something that I want to insert onto all of my requests, I don't want to do that and have to maintain this same configuration inside of all of my applications. This Lambda, I don't want to write that inside of all my applications. I want something simpler. So we do, of course, encourage you to move this into a class. So I wrote a little class here called My Middleware, and the default syntax, structure that you need to support, and this isn't something that you can do really with an interface, because we require you to have a constructor that takes a request delegate, right? This is that next thing in the chain that's going to execute after this. And you also need to have an invoke method here that returns a task and receives context, right? My HTTP context, what's actually happening here? So very simply, this middleware gets started up. It keeps a copy of what that next request delegate is. When it's invoked, it adds a response header with that tag name and then this value, and then says, okay, return next, go do the next thing. And then I can include that with a use middleware statement, okay? So this says, use middleware of type my middleware, and there's no arguments to pass in, just run. So when I run the way that that is configured, that starts up, there's my hello world, there's the request, and now I've got my other header being output. Okay, but that's still a little bit lame that I have to specify the name of my middleware, and I could pass some arguments up here inside my constructor. Maybe I want to pass in the name of the person who was here. So I could say this.name equals name. So then maybe I change this to name. Put a dollar sign there. There we go. And I would have to come over here, and instead of saying use middleware, I need to specify my constructor parameters. So we'll say here, Scott. So now I'm passing a constructor parameter into my middleware. It's going to get booted up. And I can take a look at this. And now Scott was here. So you can pass configuration into your middleware to store and process and handle. But once again, I'm looking at this syntax and the way this is structured, and that's not friendly. Right, I still have to do this use middleware thing. I'd rather use something that looks like this, where I've got something that's specific to my piece of middleware that I'm able to do. The way you do that, and the way that we recommend and we kind of want to push a standard for folks to use, is to create a static class and extend iApplicationBuilder with that appropriate middleware statement. So let me actually add on to this a name, and we'll pass it in here. So quite literally, this syntax is exactly the same as what's over here. It's just we've created this syntactic sugar, right? So I can say use my middleware, and I can pass in here and say J. If I run it now, it's now being passed down the pipe, and it's going to pop out. right there. There we go. Okay? So middleware, you can configure a bunch of different ways. You have lots of options, lots of choices for how you can do that. I recommend that you take a look at any of these types of things and figure out what fits best for you. So that's a little bit about how middleware works. But routing is really where it's at. That's something that we need to do in all of our MVC or web API applications. So let me bring up my routing demo. When we're routing, typically you have at the end of the default templates, you have the use MVC, and then it has that default template configured with controller/action. Well, you can actually define and map other things using the Route Builder class. So I can do things like call map get and pass things over that say, you know, if somebody requests now, just write out the date. Or I can map hello to, you know, hello/someone's name, and I can actually spit out hello, whatever that person's name is. And you can use the router directly. You don't have to say use MVC. You can use the router and interact very, very quickly without all the overhead of MVC or web API. So let's take a look at what that looks like. This is going to try to go to API values, which doesn't exist. But I'm going to change this to now, and I get the time. I can also go to /hello/Jeff, and I get hello Jeff, because it sees that, and it knows how to map that, grab the route data, the name out of it, and pipe it out. Okay, so the router is very, very flexible. Lots that you can do to it besides just build those MVC templates. So this does allow for additional actions. The question is, are there additional actions you can do? Yes. You can map all kinds of things in here and set that up, and the router is configured top to bottom, just like our middleware. Whatever's at the top can be overridden by something below it. But if there's something that it sees at the top that it can handle, that will process and handle it. Good questions. So that's a little bit about the router. So using full framework features, I want to make sure that you know that you can still use those libraries and things that you've built with the full .NET framework with your application. So I'm going to start a new project here that's ASP.NET Core Web Application with .NET Framework. And sure, I'll use the web application. So this is going to come up. And I've got a full application sitting out here. And we know this is full framework because when we look in Project JSON, the framework is listed as 4.6.2. Right? This is the framework that it's pulling from Windows, from the GAC, and making available to us. You also notice that there is no reference to the .NET Standard or .NET Core app frameworks up here and under dependencies. It's just our NuGet packages that we need to run our application. I can add in and use things like the Configuration Manager right here inside of my application. So let me go over to Home Controller, and I'm going to add into my About page. Let's move things over so it's easier to see. So I'm going to say var, my config value equals configuration manager. Well, configuration manager wasn't in my list of NuGet packages. If I do a control period, it actually wants to bring this in from somewhere else, from another package. That's not where I'm going to get it from. I can actually still go through and say add reference. And in here, if I go find system config, let's add that. It's funny saying restoring packages when it's a DLL sitting out there. But you'll notice in Project JSON now, it creates this node inside of Net 4.6.2 framework assemblies, and it's specifying here's an assembly that I want you to use. So if I come back over here and I try this again, now it's saying use system configuration. It knows what it is. So I can reach into app settings and I can pull out whatever value at that point. Where is that app settings coming from? I'm not necessarily running on IIS, I'm running with Kestrel, I'm running with WebListener. It actually comes out of an app config. If you bring an app config with you and you put it down in the folder, you can put app settings in here and you can read them out with your configuration manager. But configuration isn't the only thing that you can do this with. You can still use system.data and all those things that you may have built with the system.data environment in ADO.NET here in ASP.NET Core, but you'll be restricted to using it on Windows because there is no GAC. Those frameworks don't exist over on Mac and Linux, okay? So you can bring in Entity Framework 6 if you'd like, bring in some of those other great tools that you've used in previous versions of .NET that aren't .NET Core and use it here inside of your application. Those links that I showed you earlier get everything for ASP.NET from .NET. Check out the docs, they're open source. Download them, put them on your device. So if something happens and you are not online, you can get to them. They're at docs.asp.net. Like I said, source code is at github.com/asp.net. I encourage you to check out the community standup, live ASP.net, our blog, and of course, we just released the preview one. If you're comfortable with where you are and you want to try something that we've started with, and some of those new enhancements, the announcement is over here on our web dev blog. I think it's the most recent article on the blog that you'll find. My name is Jeff Fritz. Thanks so much for coming out today, guys.